I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's about time for true crime.
Hey.
Hi, how are you?
I think you could hear me sound stuffy in that.
Probably.
About time for true crime. So anyway, I have a case of the old allergies.
Yeah, but how upset can you be after Florida?
I know.
I mean,
I
really.
Can't be.
No.
I can't be. But that is why I sound the way I do. So my apologies to everybody because you are stuck with me today.
Which is exciting, but a twist.
Yes.
Yes. We had lots of exciting things go on in the last few weeks. So Allie and I went on a little vacation together, which is exciting. But that is also part of why you're getting a super special back-to-back Allie episode.
Hells yeah.
Love it.
By vacation, we mean bachelorette party.
Ah, it was so good. It was so fun.
So, yes, lots of fun, lots of sun.
Ooh.
Lots of, what else rhymes with that? I've got nothing.
Well, there were no nuns. I know that.
No nuns. But none.
Oh my gosh. Sorry, you guys. If you're sticking with us through this, like, you're ride or dies. We
Thank
love you.
We Thank love, you. We love and appreciate you. We say that every time, but, like, we say it because it's true.
Okay? Yes. And how is your week? Because ours was good, exhausting, but so fun, but good.
Yes.
And we want to hear all about yours. So tell us, how is that weird coworker? How is your mom? She good? Your dad? Your chosen family, added relatives? Tell me all about it.
Yeah. How are your pets doing? How are your pod pets?
We haven't seen a pod pet here in a hot minute. So I'm going to respectfully ask you again to show me your freaking fur baby. Thanks.
Please.
Or whatever baby you have. They don't have to have fur. I saw baby chicks the other day.
Oh.
I get to hold one.
Oh.
They went. They
they're
didn't even
so
have like feather feathers.
Cute. I love when they're all like floofy.
Yes.
They're all just like little fuzzies.
Yeah.
Little guy.
I love him.
Oh.
But anyway, that's the news here. That's all we got, really.
That's all I got. And I want to get into this because I have so much to tell you.
Oh my gosh.
And
okay.
Very little voice to
yes.
tell you with.
Okay.
So are we ready?
We are. And the race against your voice box starts now.
Now. Okay. So skipper, stop skipping.
Hey, pod's on.
Because if you expected a long intro, joke's on you. I sound like shit.
You
but
don't.
Hi, hello, and welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast.
Aww.
You silly gooses or geese or whatever.
It's definitely gooses.
In that context. I
yeah.
think so, too. Either way, geese, gooses,
ducks, whatever.
All of the above.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us in our little corner of the true crime world. We love getting to hang out with you. And if you like hanging out with us, too, maybe you want to give us 5 stars.
Or like a little download
or review or repost our posts or share the pod or send us an email or I don't know, just
like and follow
any of that,
you know,
tell friends.
If you really were like itching to spend $5 in your pocket, we do have a Venmo and a PayPal, and I do hate saying that every time, but if I don't say it, people don't know about it, so
it's true.
We do this for free 99.
Yes.
And we love it. We like having the conversations, but it is nice to help us keep up with the
all the subscription costs to all our sources,
yeah.
and the cost of doing this anyway, which is our choice, and we love doing it, and we want to continue to, but it is a nice boost to be like, oh, you actually want us to do that too. That's
right.
That is neat. So
I always say it, but don't feel pressured. Just enjoy.
Today I have a case unlike anything I have given you before.
Ooh.
It hurts.
Oh.
It hurts a lot.
Yikes.
Some sources, because again, if I don't tell you now, I will forget to tell you later. I used BBC, New York Times, Washington Post, The Sun, The Guardian, Spokesman Review, Newsleader, many more, all of which are included in our show notes. Warning for today, this episode includes fetal abduction. Which you likely know from the title, but Abby had no idea. So that's what we're talking about. A lot of talk of child sexual assault. I'm sorry. Violence, graphic description of a crime scene, and more. And if that's not for you, that's okay. We will see you next time. But if you are joining us on this ride, please keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times. Because as always, it's going to
be a bumpy
ride.
Shut up.
No, you. All right. So we're going to set the scene here. We're going to jump ahead. We're going to kind of be bebopping around in time, but I will guide you. On December 16th, 2004, Becky Harper became worried about her pregnant 23-year-old daughter, Bobby Jo.
Ooh.
She hadn't heard from her, and she was expecting to. Trusting her maternal instinct, she knew she had to check on her. When she arrived at Bobby Joe's home, she saw what is probably the most unimaginable, horrific scene anyone could imagine, any parent could imagine.
Oh.
She quickly and in a panic dialed 911 and asked for paramedics, asked for anybody who could help.
Mm-hmm.
She said it looked as if her daughter's stomach had exploded.
Oh, God.
So we're going to put a pin there.
This
is, if the first 30 seconds haven't sounded like something that you are up for right now, then
it's not getting better, I bet.
It's not going to get better from here.
Oh, gosh.
But we're going to rewind. We're going to go back in time further. And we're going to talk about Bobby Jo.
Okay.
Because Bobby Jo Potter was born December 4th, 1981, to parents Becky and Joseph Potter in Skidmore, Missouri.
Okay.
Which is a town of less than like 500 people. Although now I think it's less. Now I think it's like 300 people.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, so okay. I mean, regardless, we're talking small town.
Yeah.
Becky and Joseph had married a few years before Bobby Jo was born in 1978. And Becky had become pregnant soon after. But unfortunately, she had a miscarriage.
Aww.
So when she became pregnant again, she was elated.
Okay.
And that's when she gave birth in 1981 to their beautiful baby girl they named Bobby Jo. Becky loved and doted on her baby girl, but her husband Joseph was more interested in basically anything else.
Okay.
Very little interest in the family, and he abandoned them when Bobby Jo was only 4.
Oh my gosh.
So they got divorced.
That sucks.
Becky worked hard as a single mom to provide for her young daughter, and she tried to offer her the best life that she possibly could on her own.
A single mom who works too hard?
Pretty much.
Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah. Bobby Jo was born with a cleft palate.
Okay.
And at 2 years old, Becky was able to afford the surgery to correct that.
Oh, awesome. Okay.
As a result, she did have a speech impediment in her youth, which is attributed to be one of the reasons she was so shy as a child. I think she kind of grew out of it.
Yeah.
But it was one of the things. So she wasn't like, she was a shy kid.
I get that.
She also suffered severe ear infections and had to have like tubes put in her ears. So either way, despite those health issues that she suffered from, her mom just worked really hard to make sure that her daughter was getting the best possible care and treatment she could.
That's so good.
Becky found love again, and she remarried, and she became and remained Becky Harper.
Okay.
So when Bobby was 13, Becky actually gave birth to her little brother, Tyler, with her new husband.
Mm.
When Bobby Jo was in high school, she was an excellent student, honor roll, you name it. She was a very kind young girl. She came out of her shell a little bit. She shed that shy outer part and came into her own when she joined the cheerleading team. She began horse riding. She worked on the school newspaper.
Wow.
She was just an involved student and a good kid.
Yeah.
In the midst of all of this, she also began dating another student.
Ooh.
His name was Zeb Stinnett.
That's a great name.
And I've never met anybody named Zeb. Like, I've heard the name before, and I'm like, that is a decision.
It is.
I think it's cool, but it's like so unlike anything else.
I think it's cool. I think I'd have a hard time with like an infant being like baby Zeb, but like once you're, you know, 10 plus, I think it's a sick name, you know?
Oh yeah.
It just would take a little getting used to, but I like it.
There are a lot of like adult names that I'm like, to hold your beautiful newborn baby and say, yes, Howard.
Walter.
Yeah, you know, there's just where it's a great adult name, but like there's some growing into it. They have to grow into those
shoes.
There's
a little comic relief there at the beginning too.
Yes, like Grant.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Oh, little baby.
Yes. But Zeb and Bobby Jo were in love.
Okay.
Shortly after she graduated in 2000, their relationship grew more serious. So it wasn't just this kind of high school fling. It was the real deal, if you will.
Okay.
Bobby Jo had a love of animals, of course horses, but especially dogs.
Yeah.
she had dreamed of breeding rat terriers, and she had one named Tipsy, who she adored, which Aww. Is just the cutest dog name. I had a rat terrier and I loved her dearly.
I love that.
She loved training them, and many who knew her actually said that she had this natural gift with dogs, that they were drawn to her, comfortable with her, look to her for direction. She had that natural sort of, like, she was in charge with them, but right. they loved her, not in this domineering, frightful way. It was right. that, you know, they took to her. They loved her.
That's awesome. That's always a really good indicator for what kind of person someone is if animals can flock to them and feel comfortable.
Like, if my cat hates you, and my cat is like a little, one of them is a little skittish, but like, she's a sweetheart.
Yes.
Miss Little Mia, if you've heard her stories on the pod before. But if she like hates you, I'm like, what's wrong with you?
Right.
You know,
there's like, a red flag somewhere. Sometimes they missing. Can tell,
like, if your dog doesn't, you know, there's just little things here and there, but every dog just seemed to love her. And she was so passionate mm-hmm. about it. She's like, I can't do this right now, but I really want to. It was her goal.
Yeah.
Very soon that. To like, that was her. She wanted that to be her business. She loved the puppies. She loved training them. She loved doing dog shows.
Oh,
like,
we'll wow.
talk.
Okay.
We'll talk all about that in a little bit. But like, this is what she was working towards.
This is her passion. Okay.
So fresh out of high school, she actually worked at a feed and supply store in town. But in 2002, when her dog Tipsy had a litter, she was able to leave the job that she had to pursue that dream. Mm-hmm. So she kind of got like started. While Zeb worked at a local Kawasaki plant, she worked there for a little bit too. But then she worked from home doing what she always wanted to do, which was with the dogs.
That's awesome.
In April of 2003, Bobby Joe and Zeb got married.
Da-dum, da-dum.
Yes.
Cute.
They were very young, but very happy and in love. And what else can you ask for, really?
Yeah. And also, like, they had gotten each other through high school, so they graduated, which I think is super important.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. I like it.
She went to a lot of dog shows, like I said before, but she also met a lot of people that way.
Yeah.
Again, we're talking a very small town, the kind of place where, and I'm not exaggerating, everybody quite literally does know everybody, and everyone's families knows each other because yep. everyone is, who's living there has been there forever.
Right.
Not necessarily a town people were moving to.
Yes.
But not always the town people were moving out of.
Right.
Just so
a there's comfortable a comfortable little spot.
History there.
Maybe a little off the map, yeah.
She would travel a lot, sort of. Not, I don't think like on planes, but like she would drive around and put her around to all the dog shows. And she met a lot of people that way. She was an active member of this online rat terrier group called oh, Ratter Chatter.
What?
Which is the cutest thing ever.
I love that.
But on this little chat and like through her own website later and everything, she really gained this good reputation because
yeah.
she was a good reference point of contact. You could ask questions. She made herself available for those things. If anyone was looking to adopt a puppy, that was something that they were able to do, so that was pretty cool.
That's so cute. I love that.
And by April 2004, they found out they were pregnant.
Wow. Okay.
And they were so excited. So by November of that year, they found out what they were having. They were having a baby girl, and her due date was in January. So just after the holidays, it's like the final best day of them all.
Okay, love.
And they were so looking forward to welcoming their baby girl. And Bobby Joe wanted to name her Victoria Joe.
Okay.
She continued to post on her website for her business. There were photos of her with the terriers at dog shows, and it became noticeable that she was pregnant. You could see that she had, like, the baby bump. You know, it grew over the months with the pictures and everything, and she had the very sweetest glow. She was thin with shoulder-length brown hair, forehead bangs, and big brown eyes.
Oh,
she was just so cute. Just cute. Cute, cute, cute. And remember, she's 23.
Right.
So, you know, to me, baby.
Baby.
On December 15th, 2004, again, we're kind of fast forwarding.
Okay.
At nearly 8 months pregnant, she told her mom, Becky, and her husband, Zeb, that she had invited a woman over. I don't know that she said the woman's name, but the woman was named Darlene, who wanted to see the puppies and potentially buy one.
Okay.
On December 16th, around 2:30, according to most of the reports, so that next day, the day that Darlene was due over,
okay,
she spoke with her mom again over the phone, and that guest was there with the puppies. They'd taken them out. Hmm. And Becky confirmed with her that she could pick her up from work, because Becky worked like 2 or 3 blocks away from where Bobby Joe lived.
Oh, nice.
But instead of just having to like walk there, it was like, could you pick me up? Bobby Joe said yes.
Cute.
And that they would, she was getting off work, I think at 3:30, or that's when she needed the ride. But 3:30 came and went.
Oh, gosh.
So Becky was like, something's wrong.
Right, of course.
It was not like her daughter to stand her up. She wouldn't have missed that. She wouldn't have not like reached out first. This has never happened before.
Well, and especially on the same day with a call already confirming.
Exactly. Just, you know, an hour beforehand. But also, you're thinking, okay, like, she's pregnant. Did something happen? Did she go into labor? You know, like, all of these different things that, like, might not necessarily be bad, but, like, there's concern.
Of course. What's
something, there's been a change.
Yeah.
So she walked the 2 blocks to Bobby Joe's house and as quickly as she could, like she was speed walking.
I can picture.
But when she got there, she noticed that the front door was open, which was not like her.
Oh.
But when she walked in, she found her 23-year-old daughter on the floor of the dining room with a huge gash in her abdomen.
Oh my gosh.
Her call to 911 was nearly unintelligible, but she was able to tell them that it looked like her daughter's stomach had exploded.
Wow.
So removing our pin from earlier, this is the scene. She followed dispatch instructions to give CPR. Mm-hmm. A deputy that was on duty was sent there while paramedics were on the way. But because Skidmore was such a small town, they didn't have any of those resources nearby. So it was really just sort of a waiting game.
Okay.
The nearest first responders were based, I think, like a half hour away at most.
Okay.
Which is not the furthest you've heard of, but that's still like at a minimum, it's a half hour.
Right.
That's not, I mean, that's not good.
That's
emergencies can't wait that long. Best case
scenario. Yeah.
You know?
Ugh. Okay.
The deputy finally got there and he assisted in any way he could. But when the paramedics finally did get there, they confirmed that Bobby Joe was already dead.
Oh.
Becky was in disbelief and sheer panic. And I cannot imagine what she went through in those moments and pretty much every moment afterwards.
Right. Well, that's all I'm thinking is how devastating for her mom to go here, find this scene, but also be the one trying to do some sort of emergency
life-saving measures.
Yeah. And I don't know if you guys have ever done CPR. It's freaking exhausting. I mean, you're throwing your body weight into that. And like part of CPR is like if you're doing it deeply enough and as strongly as you're supposed to, like you're going to break a rib on the person, basically. So that's hard enough to get through already because you want to save this person. So you're like, oh, I don't want to do that, but I have to do that.
Yep.
And they're getting walked through it by 911 for them to show up and say like, never mind.
And there was probably a part of her that already knew.
Well, of course, the scene, but you're not going to not.
It was so horrific. And we'll talk about how and why, unfortunately. But that's her daughter. That's her baby. And not only is she hurt, but she's not responding to you. There's nobody else around. Help is on the way, but for those minutes, you are alone. And you are doing everything you can.
And every minute feels like an hour. So,
she must have been terrified, but infuriated. I mean, I don't know what other... My heart goes out. My heart aches for her. My stomach hurt.
Yeah.
Reading all of this, because I cannot fathom. Like, she is such a victim in this, too. Just what she had to experience.
And what an awful parallel, because clearly, whoever this was had some sort of desire or issue with Bobby Joe's pregnancy. So it's like, I'll take your child from you, and then you get there and your child's taken from you, and that's just heart-wrenching.
Yeah, it was essentially done twice in one day.
Yeah. Oh.
She saw her daughter's internal organs.
Oh.
Like that's the depth of this scene here. She told the EMTs when they were there that her daughter was 8 months pregnant and obviously the wound was to her stomach.
Okay.
but they noticed that the umbilical cord had been cut and someone had stolen the baby from her body.
Oh my gosh.
The investigation continued because obviously they're just getting started, but the following were uncovered. And there's sort of like a way that this was all done, but I just kind of wanted to give it to you rapid fire because I don't want us all to have to live here super long.
Fair.
There was blood pooling at the bottom of her feet and on the top of her feet, which told investigators that she stood up and fought back at one point during this attack, which means she was not already dead.
Oh, God.
Okay. By the time this happened, she had been strangled with a cord. So the belief is, and it was later confirmed, that she had fallen unconscious when she was strangled.
Okay.
But when she was stabbed and cut open, that pain woke her back up.
Oh, God.
So then she fought. And she was fighting.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, her attacker had already done too much damage.
Well, of course.
When Bobby Joe was found, she had a clump of blonde hair in her hand. But remember, Bobby Joe is not a blonde.
No. She's got that Zooey Deschanel look.
According to Oxygen, Sheriff Randy Strong said, quote, she had a jagged gash across her abdomen that exposed some of her internal organs.
Wow.
Just so, I mean, that's the picture here. But medical staff said that the baby could still be alive, but the clock was ticking.
Of course.
The baby was 1 month premature.
Oh.
And was in the arms of likely her mother's killer.
Yeah.
So that's where we're going to switch gears.
Holy poop. Okay.
I know everything we just covered is very difficult. Take a moment and pause if you need to. When I was researching, I had to. But we're going to switch gears, and you'll see why, to talk about Lisa Montgomery.
Okay.
Lisa's life was not a happy one. Not one bit.
I was thinking.
Warning here for child abuse and sexual assault, if that's not what you're in the headspace for, you might want to skip ahead. Lisa Hedberg was born in 1968.
Okay.
Soon after her little sister was born, her parents divorced. Her mom was basically desperate to find a man and keep him.
Yeah.
And she found that in a man named Jack Kleiner, who already had five of his own children. Her mother would have three children with this man. So
now what, 10?
That's a lot of kids.
That is a lot of kids.
When she was 3 years old, her half-sister was raped by a male babysitter while they slept in the same bed.
Oh, God.
By the time Lisa herself was 11, she had been the focus of her evil stepfather's sexual abuse. Often when he was drunk, which was most of the time, he beat all of the kids, his biological kids and stepkids. And the beatings were often closed fists or with a belt. Lisa was not immune to his beatings. She received them just like the rest of them. She even received a brain injury after her head was smashed on their concrete floor.
Oh, gosh.
He sexually assaulted her and invited others over to join in.
Oh.
Her mother walked in once when Lisa was 15 and caught her husband assaulting her daughter. And you know what she did? She threatened Lisa and said, "How dare you do this to me?"
Yep. Yeah, I thought that might be
coming. And accused her of trying to kill, accused her of trying to steal her man.
I have so many thoughts. I'm so angry. At first, I was like, you know what? It is the 60s. Women can't even own their own fucking bank account. I get needing to find someone to, like, partner with. But what the full-on fuck? Like, yep. Truly, I cannot emphasize enough. What the fuck?
Exactly. Yep.
Wow. Okay.
No, you're right. And that's not to say that we know much about Lisa's mom, other than she was evil. And she found evil where she went.
Well, and at the very least, complacency to evil is part of the problem.
Oh, wait, it goes further. Because dear God. When her mom needed odd jobs done around the house, whether it was a plumbing issue, electrical, whatever it was, she just offered Lisa as payment for that
labor. Are you?
Lisa was failed by every adult in her family, every system designed to protect her. Lisa's life was one of terror, severe abuse, and horror. There's no other way I can describe that, because these experiences that singularly would deeply traumatize a child were a daily occurrence for her.
That's so awful.
Her mother had several kids, often got together with several men who also had several kids. These were not good men. Her mother was not a good woman. A victim, you bet. Her mom was beat too. But that does not excuse what she allowed to happen to her kids by others.
Absolutely.
And how she treated her kids.
Yeah.
She offered no love or affection, no support, no emotional stability. And though it seemed this woman hated being a mom, she just kept having kids. Her mom and Jack divorced, not because he was a monster, but because it just wasn't working out. Her mom remarried a new man, this one named Richard Bowman, who had adult kids, so he didn't have kids that were in the home. But one of them came home from being away, his name is Carl, and married Lisa. So she married her stepbrother.
Well, that sucks. I'm assuming that wasn't her own desire.
It could have been. She was 18.
Okay. All right.
But she married her stepbrother. So there's some flaws there. And I mean, they weren't, you know, I'm not saying they were related or anything, but they, like, it was like her mom married the dad and then she married him pretty quick.
Yeah.
I don't suspect there was a courting, dating, happy process here.
Doesn't seem it.
But Lisa had four kids in quick succession. But after her last, doctors recommended that she get a tubal ligation, also referred to as getting your tubes tied.
Okay.
But she didn't want this procedure.
Okay.
But it was forced upon her by her mother and her husband, which I don't know how the fuck her mom had any say over anything, but the pull that other people had on her was pretty great.
Yeah.
In those earlier years.
Holy shit. Okay.
And her husband wanted that done too. And I think they were saying this as in terms of like, you can die if you don't.
Okay. Like there's this, a very life preserving reason for
right,
this.
Like we okay. highly suggest this is something you do. I think that's what the doctors were thinking. I don't think that the other motives were as pure
right,
or
of
as
course.
Transparent. But if you are like me and you hoped that Lisa would have been able to or capable of realizing how she was raised was so awful to try to get help and learn to be the best mom that she could be, then you are living in the unicorn shooting rainbows world that we often talk about.
But it's my favorite.
As much as we'd like to wish for these things, this didn't happen with Lisa. And that's not to mean that it couldn't happen to somebody else.
Right.
But in Lisa's case, it did not. She did not have these skills. It didn't seem that she tried to. She didn't care for her kids.
Okay.
They were dirty, unruly, left to fend for themselves. Teachers actually stepped up and cleaned the kids up and brought them clothes because the parents did not.
Okay.
Lisa seemed to love being pregnant.
Mm.
And she loved the attention being pregnant got her. She also enjoyed the attention from having a new baby.
Okay.
But once the baby was out of that infant stage and had lost all of its polish, so did being a mom.
Yeah.
And Carl grew sick of this. He worked while Lisa laid on the couch. Like, their house was dirty. Not messy, but dirty.
Yeah, there's a difference.
Roach infested.
Ugh.
Rotten. The kids were so unclean. It was a very horrible...
Their clothes could stand up on their own.
Most likely.
Got it.
Which is indicative a lot of severe mental illness, and that's not to say that that's not the case, but nobody stepped in even for these kids, it seems.
Right.
And her husband was pissed.
Okay.
Carl couldn't take it anymore. He divorced her and he took off.
Nice.
And he left her with the kids. But then Lisa told him she was pregnant. She figured this would keep him, and she was right. He knew that she'd had that procedure done, but he was also told sometimes it didn't work.
Right.
So he believed her. He watched as her belly grew, and she was hell-bent on saying that she was pregnant, but then she would say that she miscarried.
Got it.
And so they'd kind of break up and get back together. But she had learned that by claiming she was pregnant when she wasn't, she kept the man who offered her financial stability.
Right.
Or as close to that as she was going to get.
Okay.
So she moved to Kansas in 1999, and she met and married a man named Kevin Montgomery.
So she's over Carl now.
Yes, they're done now.
Okay.
And she became Lisa Montgomery, which is how we refer to her from here on out.
Okay.
Kevin had grown children.
Okay.
So his were out of the house as well. And he was a decent man. But it must be foggy in Topeka, Kansas, because he did not see these red flags.
Oy vey.
She told him she was pregnant pretty much immediately, but he did not want the baby. And even though family had told him about her medical procedure, that she'd had her tubes tied, he still believed her over them and that she was pregnant.
Well, I'm generally inclined to believe people about what's going on in their own body.
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
But she wasn't, and she couldn't be. But he did marry her for that baby. But the baby never came. In the year 2000, the internet became popular.
Yeah.
And Lisa was one of the thousands of people who logged on.
Okay.
Obsessed with posting about her kids, obsessed with wanting more kids. Her kids were teens now.
Okay.
And she missed what having an infant brought her.
Right.
And she was growing desperate.
Probably actual oxytocin and pleasant brain chemicals.
Not being a mom.
No.
Just the attention from having the baby. From right. being pregnant, expecting a baby, having the baby. Oh, look, it's my baby.
Oh, now we need to start again.
Shower me with love and adoration. And once that stopped, so did her
desire.
Affection for that child.
Oh.
Throughout this marriage with Kevin, she faked several pregnancies. But with the internet handy, she was able to falsify documents and printed an ultrasound offline, and she wouldn't let him attend appointments. And every time her due date was approaching, she would tell him she lost the baby. And that is an awful thing, because I don't doubt at some point she likely did suffer a miscarriage. And right. I don't like commenting on things I can't understand.
Of course.
And those close to me who have experienced that, I know that it is a very troubling, very sad, awful experience, and I wouldn't wish that on anybody. And there's grief, and there's confusion, and there's a lot of mental
anguish
toll that yeah. that takes. That there's a lot of conflicting feelings going on, and so I don't just kind of disregard all of this talk of miscarriage because I disregard that. It's that
right.
most of these, actually all of the ones we're talking about, weren't real.
Right. It's not a genuine grieving period for her. It's not an experience
she had.
But the other thing I'm going to say here, knowing that, you know, neither of us are moms and neither of us have been in a situation where we were with a partner who miscarried, because that'd be kind of hard for us. But
challenging, yep.
You know, I feel for him so much in all of this, because for him, every miscarriage, whether or not that pregnancy was real, he's mourning that child.
Mm-hmm.
Because for men, they don't get that growth period. They don't get the pregnancy period. They don't have all of that. They can't feel it. They're not actively partaking in the growing of that child, even though they actively partook in the creation and hopefully will in the raising.
Right.
But every time, that's an entire future that you've imagined for yourself with your partner that is now shattered yeah, and not happening.
It's a life-changing event to have a kid.
Yeah.
And it's a life-changing event to find out that that's not going to be the case.
Right. Yeah, I want to give him a hug.
But they lived on a farm.
Yeah.
So she kept busy with chickens and farm animals. And in 2002, she started breeding rat terriers.
Oy vey.
She joined a website called Ratter Chatter.
Which is really cute.
And began conversing with other people, you know. And really just, I mean, she was talking with people. This was something that she was doing and interested in, whatever. And in 2004, she met a woman named Bobby Jo Stinnett. And soon after that, she saw online that Bobby Jo was pregnant.
Yeah, I bet she did.
And as soon as she saw that Bobby Jo was pregnant, Lisa told her husband, Kevin, that she too was pregnant and that she would have the baby in December.
Ah! Okay.
Lisa's ex, Carl.
Yeah.
He was married again. And this time he was in this like custody battle with Lisa.
Okay.
And he was threatening to expose to her current husband that she was faking pregnancies as she had with him.
Okay.
And this was also going to be some of the fuel he was going to bring with him to court because he was trying, he wanted custody of the kids that he shared with Lisa.
That's awesome.
But he was trying to say, I believed that she was pregnant when I knew her every not time. To be.
Yeah.
I also know that she had this procedure.
Right.
Where she cannot have kids. And she knows that. And she continues to say that she is having kids. Children.
Yeah.
And he's just like, look at all of the lies. Like, this pattern of lying is so visible throughout.
Right. And it's awful because, you know, I sit and I think about her childhood and the way she grew up. And like you and I say, like, we always hope, like, you feel so bad for the kid and you hope that they can grow up and recognize and do better. It doesn't seem like she even knew there was a different, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is, and it's a harsh reality, and people really don't like hearing this, but if you don't change it, you choose it.
If nothing changes, nothing changes.
And it's not that is fact. Like, that's as simple and as objective as you can be. And that's not to say that there are so many different layers of things that go into that.
Oh, of course.
And motivation to change, desire to change, access to resources and tools to be able to change. All of those things are involved. But at its core, it's...
what's going to happen is what you allow.
If you don't change it, it will continue.
Right.
And that's a fact. So if that is the life that you want, great. That's what it's going to be. If it's not, and you're not doing anything to remove that or change that or put efforts in to change that,
then nothing's going to be removed or changed.
It's not going to fall on your lap. And so I so feel for what she experienced. And I wouldn't wish that on anybody. That is some of the most horrific shit I have ever read.
Yeah.
And it offers context, but it doesn't excuse.
Well, it's a reason. It's not an excuse. Yeah.
Exactly. So,
oh God,
her ex is coming at her,
okay,
saying, like, I have all of this information. I'm going to be bringing you to court.
I'm going to out you.
And in November, she had spoken with him and she did not seem concerned. She was like, nope, I'm pregnant. I am having a baby. And he's like, you literally can't.
And she was like, watch me.
But she was not concerned.
Oh,
she's like, I'll have a baby.
Mama got a plan. Ugh.
She made a profile under the name Darlene Fisher.
Yeah.
And she made arrangements to go to Bobby Joe's home on December 16th in 2004. The rest you already know. It was Lisa who wrapped the cord around her neck. It was Lisa who knocked her out. It was Lisa who took a knife from the kitchen and stabbed Bobby Joe's stomach. It was Lisa who cut the baby out of Bobby Joe's body. Bobby Jo fought. She got up. She clawed and scratched and fought for her life and the life of her baby. But Lisa Montgomery was determined. After abducting that baby, she drove up the road, clamped the umbilical cord, and went to a Long John Silver's and waited in the parking lot and told her husband that she'd given birth and she needed to be picked up.
At Long John Silver's?
Yes. Because this is kind of weird to me, because Lisa lived 3 hours from Bobby Jo. So it was a hike to get to Bobby Joe's house. So what I couldn't tell was, did she drive to a Long John Silver's near her? Like, she drive all the way almost home, go there and say, hey, can you come pick me up? Because the thing was, is there was a birthing center not a hospital, a birthing center right next to the Long John Silver's, which is where she told her husband she gave birth.
Okay.
So maybe she's like, I'm in no condition to drive. Can you come get me?
I'll take that.
Really selling the part. So that's what I think, from what I'm piecing together, that's what I think happened. But it's a confirmed Long John Silver, whatever that means to you.
Fucking wild. Can you get me a number six, babe?
Pretty much.
I want the fish sticks for the baby. Ugh.
After he picked her up and you can't make this shit up, they went to lunch.
I bet they did.
How? I've never had a baby. But from what I've heard.
Ow.
That too. But also, an hour after that, are you like, all right, let's get on some fucking jeans. Let's go to fucking Olive Garden.
Not the hard pants. Not the hard pants after that shit.
Who wants some fucking breadsticks?
Oy vey.
Not me. I don't know. So anyway, not only that, but they go to lunch, but then they go to make their rounds. They go see people.
What?
Yeah. They're like, oh, look at our newborn baby. And yes, it is a very fresh out of the oven bun.
This poor man has no idea how this works, does he?
But what an idiot. What an idiot. Are you serious? You've had kids before, sir. I know it's been at least 18 years, but damn. You're like, wow, she just bounces back quick, huh?
She's still young. She got that bounce back.
It's like in...
Holy.
What is it? Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. And he's like, her last baby came out sideways and she didn't scream or nothing.
Yep. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Like, is he thinking that... Anyway, so we'll get there too.
Sorry. That's wild. Okay.
I have not given birth. I imagine that is not what I would be doing with the day. But she also posted a photo of this baby online and she said that she named the baby Abigail and welcomed her into the world.
It's a great name. All right, I'll give them that.
I have to agree with that, but that might be the only good decision Lisa Montgomery has ever made.
Abigail Montgomery is a cute name.
It is kind of cute.
Damn it.
Meanwhile, though.
Yeah.
The media went crazy.
Okay.
Typical small town, that stuff doesn't happen here, but also a baby was cut from her mother's womb. Is there a place you'd say, yeah, that kind of thing happens around these parts?
No, don't think so.
You're pregnant,
watch your belly.
This kind of thing doesn't happen. But like, if there's a place where it does, that is not on my travel bucket list.
No, certainly not.
Regardless, news outlets were running the story, of course.
Yeah.
But law enforcement was asking for any information they could have because... If you just arrive on scene, you see probably something you've never seen in your entire career.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that has never happened. And that's not to say that this area was like 100% crime free, this incredible place to live. But it wasn't. I don't have the crime statistics, but I know of a few other murders that had happened in that area. Actually, all related to the same family.
Really?
Which is interesting. But this was something unlike anything you'd have even seen in a movie.
Well, no, because when you think about murder in general, like in the public eye.
And I do every day.
You think about like inner city. You think about gang wars. You think about the heat of passion. You think about someone who hates their boss. Like literally there's that movie Bad Bosses where they all talk about killing their bosses. Like, you talk about these things with personal vendettas. You almost never talk about it as like, I don't want you. I want what you're carrying. And that's it.
Yep. And
your life simply doesn't matter to me. I don't care if I have to kill you. That's what I'll have to do to get the baby. But I want the baby.
Look at every show that's on Oxygen and A&E and all of those crime things where it's like Snapped and Fatal Attraction and all these things where it's like a relationship with somebody. There was a known relationship there and that turned sour and emotions got high. Or it's something that is organized or something that is like, I don't know, he like planned so much, but we'll talk about just how planned this was.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Because law enforcement is like, excuse me, what seems to be the fuck?
Yeah, literally.
And they just are asking for any information or any tips that might lead to the killer's whereabouts, because at this point they're like, there's an infant baby, a premature,
a preemie
baby in the hands of obviously somebody who's capable of significant violence.
Oh yeah.
So they're doing the interviews. Neighbors said they saw a vehicle parked on the street that they'd never seen before. And in a place where everybody knows everybody, if you haven't seen that car, you really probably haven't seen that car before.
Right.
It was a dirty red sedan.
Yep. And at that point, you know it's not your neighbor getting a new car.
Correct. So. Community members were encouraged to call about any bloody discarded clothing.
Okay.
Any blankets, or just seeing a newborn with a freshly cut umbilical cord, because that was the case. Police searched in creeks, dumpsters, trash cans, in the woods, everywhere.
Ugh.
Just searching for anything, either discarded.
Any clue, any hint, anything.
Yeah, any items or the actual baby. I mean, what could possibly be the reason for this? But it's like, we've got to start somewhere.
Right.
Then, just the next day, so December 17th, a woman in Texas said she met a woman at a dog show who had a brand new baby. Like a newborn itty bitty baby. And you know the difference between a baby that's like 6 weeks old and one that is like, literally has just been dried off.
Yep.
Baby. And apparently she was introduced to this baby girl as, oh, this is Abigail, and I just had my kid yesterday. And she also
met a fucking dog show.
And she also raised rat terriers. And it's like, wow, you bounced back quick. Like, how are you? You're out of the house already? Like,
you're in an event with a ton of people and animals where you have some element of like work duties.
Yep.
The day after allegedly giving birth.
Yes.
Jeez.
Thinking that this all seemed too similar and awfully convenient, that woman trusted her instinct and called in the tip.
Atta girl.
We love women looking out for women. Forehead kisses and nose boops for her. So research into Lisa Montgomery, who this woman was like, yeah, this chick Lisa said, you know, she got this baby and, well, I see it on the news because this is fucking everywhere.
Right, because once again, what in the full-on fuck?
Correct.
Yeah.
So when they look into Lisa Montgomery, they see that she lived actually 170 miles from Skidmore in a town called Malvern, Kansas.
Okay.
So she went from Kansas to Missouri, got the baby, and like headed home.
That's a quick way to make it federal.
Well, that's just it. So investigators headed her way to go interview her, because no matter what, they have some talking to do.
Oh, yeah.
But at the same time, other investigators are searching the contents of Bobby Joe's home, and they found the computer that she used.
Okay.
And again, she was running a business. I mean, it wasn't an online business, but a lot of her business was done online.
Of course, yeah.
So they actually pulled messages from that computer that showed a conversation between Bobby Joe and a woman named Darlene Fisher.
Okay.
Now, of course, Darlene Fisher is not Lisa Montgomery. They're not the same name, but still, they saw that those two had arranged a meeting for December 16th to look at puppies.
Right.
From a recent litter. And, well, that was the day that she died. So this is a really good lead.
Yeah, this is either the person who killed her or the last person to see her alive.
So they determined that Finkel is Einhorn, Einhorn is Finkel.
Good.
And Darlene Fisher is Lisa Montgomery.
We love how traceable everything online is.
Yeah, and this was like 2004.
Yep. IP address. It's always been good. Once again, I'm just going to remind all of you, if you don't know, everything you do online is trackable.
Most certainly.
Just so you know.
And if it was 20 years ago, can you imagine what it is now?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. They know that Becky spoke to her daughter at 2:30.
Right.
So she had to have been killed between 2:30 and 3:30.
Yep.
Because by 3:38 is when Becky Harper called in the 911 call.
Right.
So 8 minutes from when she was out of work to getting to her daughter's house and seeing that. So she spoke with her, I mean, literally an hour.
Yeah.
That is a very tight.
Not a lot of time.
Time. And I think the plan to get together was like 12:30 or something like that. So like it makes sense that this woman, this Darlene, would be the last one to see her.
Right.
So they park outside the Montgomery home. And they noticed that there's a shitty, dirty red sedan parked out front that matched the description from the neighbors. So that was kind of a check in that box. And then they see Kevin and they see Lisa, but Lisa is holding a newborn baby. So that's different. So they approach the couple and they ask to speak with Lisa privately because they're like, hey, congratulations.
Let's chat. Yeah.
And she's like, I just gave birth at a birthing center yesterday.
Yeah.
This is my daughter, Abigail. Do you want to see her? And she offered the baby. Like, do you want to look at her? I love her so much. And they noticed that I think as Lisa had was giving Abigail to them, all the cuts that she had and all of the marks that she had on her.
Yeah.
And that the baby had like this small bruise and I think like a little cut on her, which I mean, the baby wasn't harmed. Like the baby was healthy. But there was a mark that, may or may not have been
something
from, I don't know, being pried out of your mother's stomach before you were ready to leave.
Yeah, that might leave a mark or two.
So they asked Lisa a lot of questions and they called bullshit
on
her story because she gave them the story that she was at the birthing center, but they were like, yeah, so we called there and they had no births that day. Said,
actually, no, the fuck you weren't.
And she's like, oh, well, I had it done. Friends helped me. And they're like, yeah, who? She's like, well, not like helped me with it, but like they were around if I needed them. And they're like, okay, so like who? And they're like, she's like, I mean, like by phone, if I did it myself.
Yeah,
I did it myself in my kitchen.
I went to Long John Silver's. I went to their public bathroom, locked it. There was such a line. It was funny. And then I got my fish sticks. Took my little thing with me and here we are.
Pretty much.
What the fuck? But
so she said that she gave birth in her own kitchen, which like the kitchen.
Interesting choice. Okay.
Ew. But okay, anyway, that's just anyway. But then they're like, okay, so where's all of that? Like, where's all of the
placenta?
Because there was none of that. Yeah. So they're like, where's the placenta? She goes, I threw it in a creek.
Listen.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Listen, I am a compost lady, all right? I am so green and brown. It's crunchy. It's not even funny, but what?
Yep. Oh, yeah. So she's like, I threw it there, and they're like, oh, okay. We don't believe that, and here's why.
Well, love that. Okay.
So she asked to go speak to the sheriff's office.
Sure.
Or go speak with them at the sheriff's office, like in the building, to get away from the house. I think wanting to be out of earshot from her husband because he believes like this is our baby.
Yeah. You grew it. You popped
like I
it.
Saw that I you were pregnant. I saw that you had this belly and then we have the baby and the belly has gone down and there's.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a baby. What? Here's proof. The stork didn't drop it off. Here's proof.
Right.
I assume he knows how babies are made.
You never know.
So, at the sheriff's office, she just confessed.
What?
She said she strangled her. She got the baby to claim as her own. After almost 24 hours, the baby, Victoria Jo,
yeah,
was brought to the hospital to be checked out. And she met her dad, Zeb, for the very first time. Under horrific circumstances, but she was healthy.
Good.
And she was kept for observation for quite a few days. She wasn't released until I think it was the day after her mom's funeral, which is awful in and of itself.
Yeah.
But she was returned to family.
Good.
Because Lisa crossed from Missouri to Kansas with the infant, this is a what?
Federal
case. So she was charged in federal court with kidnapping resulting in death. Her husband, Kevin, stood by her, believed she was pregnant, didn't believe any of these accusations, even though Lisa had admitted it. In court, several witnesses testified to the abuse and neglect that Lisa suffered as a kid and through her teens, and how these experiences shaped her and the trajectory of her life. These claims were confirmed by several people. And I want to mention this because there's not a part of me that doesn't believe what Lisa went through was something out of the most horrible book, like that it couldn't be real. Like it had to have been the product of some awful imagination, but it was very real.
Of course.
And her siblings experienced some horrific things too.
Yeah.
Defense claimed many things, amongst them that she was severely mentally ill, and she was.
Yeah.
And these diagnoses are fairly common, but the degree to which she had them and the degree to which it negatively impacted her life and her mental status was significant.
Yeah.
She was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder.
Okay.
PTSD, obviously.
Yeah.
Depression, obviously.
Yep.
And a couple of their experts actually diagnosed her with a delusion disorder where they claimed she believed she was pregnant.
Interesting. Okay.
And they had several professionals confirm this theory.
Okay.
But prosecution came ready to fight. They had an expert witness named Dr. Park Dietz. He was their ace. He had testified in several high cases before. Maybe you've heard of some of them. John Hinckley Jr., the man who tried to kill President Ronald Reagan. Jeffrey Dahmer. Richard Kuklinski, also known as the Iceman. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber. Joel Rifkin, who murdered at least 9 women. Arthur Shawcross, who was also known as the Genesee River Killer in New York.
So just one or two.
Just to name a few. That's, okay. You know, he had a resume.
Good.
And he disagreed with the fact that she was under a delusion. Was she ill? Yes. Was this thought pattern flawed? And was it a horrible thing to do? No doubt about it. I don't think anybody would disagree on that.
Right.
But she wasn't believing a delusion that she was pregnant.
Right.
That she took measures to appear pregnant.
Yeah.
But if she had believed it, she wouldn't have tried to prove it. It would have just been her truth. And everyone around her would likely not believe her, but there would be no convincing her otherwise because it is true and real to her.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the case. They proved that she had researched how to perform a C-section.
Yeah.
That she faked a baby bump, lied about attending doctor's appointments that she never had. Which is why she didn't allow Kevin to go to appointments with her. It's because she didn't have them.
Right.
They proved that she knew she had tubal ligation. That wasn't kept from her. This was something that she agreed to, even if she either later regretted it or in the moment didn't want to agree to it. She knew that it wasn't possible, which all breaks the illusion. Like, all of this is evidence that this delusion didn't exist.
This isn't something in my core I believe to be true. This is something I want to be true, so I'm taking measures to make it appear that way, which already says I know it's not.
Yes. In September, she filled out insurance paperwork and noted that she was not pregnant.
Okay.
So that's interesting because she had to fill that out and she said no.
Not I.
But she was supposedly due in December.
Yeah.
So in September, she would most certainly be pregnant. In fact,
visibly so, probably. Yes.
She would be. I mean, she's pretty far along.
Pregnante, yeah.
Pregnant, if you will. If she had believed the story she told everybody else, she would have told one version. It would have been true to her. No one would tell her anything else. But she couldn't keep her story straight because her lies just bled over into other lies. She was constantly changing things, and when things weren't convenient, it was this or that.
Right.
But when she found out Bobby Joe was pregnant and that she would have a connection to this woman, she just waited. She did her homework. She did her research. She had things ready to go because she knew in December she was, I'm assuming that's when the litter was going to be available. And it just happened to work out in that way that she could get away with it. It would be before the baby was born, but far enough along where the baby would live.
Right. Ugh.
So, needless to say, found guilty.
Good.
And the defense wasn't saying she didn't do it,
which is always so interesting.
They weren't claiming that she didn't do it, right? But they were saying that she did it because she was so ill. I mean, essentially claiming an insanity defense and and all of that. But it was like, was she ill? Yes. And so what we don't have a difference of, because it isn't, in our system, it isn't a matter of mental illness or not. Lots of people, hundreds of thousands, millions of people have mental illness.
Yeah.
In varying degrees. It's not like it, you're not more likely to be violent or kill or hurt somebody, you know, but it's common.
It's kind of a square rectangle thing where if you have mental health, you are not more likely to be violent, but if you are violent, you are likely to have mental health.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just always interesting to me when the defense is trying to go for not guilty by reason of insanity, just because it's so unfrequently effective. Like, it's got such a small success rate for defense, and even, well, it's a small percentage of people who can use it and an even smaller percent who successfully use it.
Correct.
So it's always interesting to me when I hear that, it makes me automatically feel like it's kind of a crapshoot of like, oh, okay, we'll try it.
Exactly.
And except in like extreme cases. But you know what I mean? Like, to me, that says her defense attorneys were like, this is our best shot.
Well, exactly. I mean, she had admitted to it and she had them. I mean, there was no other, to me, there's no other, that is the only answer, that I can't think of another way in which they could have done this. But it's not that we say, if you have a mental illness, this is excused. It's, are you insane?
Right.
Because someone can be anxious and be diagnosed with anxiety, but that doesn't mean that I have a hall pass to do anything and I won't go to prison. It doesn't mean that I will automatically, my sentence will be in a psychiatric, you know, facility. It does not mean that. So it needs to be proven so far one way. And there's a lot of arguments about this.
Right.
Because to believe that she believed she was pregnant.
Yes.
If you believe that, you would likely find her not guilty by reason of insanity.
Right.
Because she was operating under a delusion that she was going to have a baby in December.
Yeah.
But there's so much evidence to show that she did everything in her power to make it look as if she was, not that she believed she was.
Right. Well, and the other thing for me, too, is, you know, a lot of the reasons that not guilty by reason of insanity works is that in this criminal justice field, we talk about mens rea. You have to have the intent on most things, not all, but most things, to be found guilty. And so it's not saying she didn't do it. It's saying she didn't have the intent and therefore it can't be the same charge. But in my thought process, even if she is quote unquote insane, if she's at a point where she cannot tell what she's doing is right versus wrong, what's real, what's fake, even in that case, she likely, if this is true, if she believes she's pregnant the whole time, I don't believe it, but I'll advocate for the sake of the argument. If she believes this the whole time and she gets to the point where she's like, oh shit, I'm 8 months in, and there's no bump, there's nothing, there's still a switch in there at some point where she goes, oh shit, I need to get that. And to me, that automatically negates all of it because she does know what she's doing at that time. You don't go to the hospital and murder, not even a hospital, you don't go to a random woman's home and murder her for her baby in the delusion that you're pregnant and giving birth.
Yep.
Maybe you'd go to the hospital and take one of the babies from the infancy wing. Not better, but like that would be a bigger argument for me.
You're like, oh, that's for this defense. I just gave birth to this baby. This is what.
Right.
Yeah. Not I pried this baby from her mother's womb.
In a setup where I used a fake name, said I was going to get a puppy that I breed myself.
Exactly.
Yeah. Ugh.
This case raised so many questions, and rightfully so. But despite attempts from Lisa and her legal team to, I don't know, persuade anyone any other way, she was just found guilty and she was actually sentenced to death.
Okay.
And she was like the first woman sentenced in federal court to death in like 70 years or something like that. She was like the only woman on death row. And they kept trying to delay her execution. But ultimately in January of 2021.
Wow.
Pretty when recent. She was 52, she was executed by lethal injection.
Wow.
And when she was asked if she had any final words, she just said no. And that was it. She was something like 36 when she committed the murder.
Wow.
She was 52 when she died. But so many people opposed the death penalty in this case. And I mean, people will always oppose it. And I have so many thoughts. I used to have a more concrete view of it. And now I am a gray area because I can see all of the sides of it. But they argued that she was incompetent, that they got it wrong.
Right.
That the abuse that she suffered in her life impacted her in ways that she couldn't ever be right, or she couldn't have been responsible wholly in this circumstance, which I see to a point, but no.
Ultimately, I think for me, it's the same as people who are like 17 committing crimes with the sheer dumb confidence that they'll be tried as children because they're not technically an adult. It's like, no, by this point, this morality in you should have developed. That's the developmental piece of it. So by 36, you should know that murdering someone is wrong. You should know that prying a baby from somebody else's body before it's even fucking born is illegal.
Correct. Like,
can I understand that she seemingly does not have any grasp on what, and this breaks my heart, but like what genuine love and care for another person is? I can see that, but that's different.
But she didn't feel that for her own kids either.
Right. And I think what bothers me,
she wanted to take this baby to give it a good life too. She wanted the attention of having the baby, which in and
of
itself
months.
Is a problem. That, I mean, that's an illness, but is it, does it negate? Or not negate, but
excuse, almost.
Essentially, does it warrant her a treatment other than what would originally be prescribed by the law?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I have so many thoughts on this. And this is going to sound so absolutely stupid because it is. Like, straight up, it is. I get that. But Why go through all of that? Why do all of that work, all of that input, all of that effort and creating things and coming up with, you know, fake names and making this meeting and murdering a woman, stealing her baby, faking birth, to 24 hours later just be like, huh, yeah, you got me. Weird, huh? What?
It doesn't add up, which when things don't make sense, and you can't make sense of them. I mean, obviously something is wrong.
Right.
But if she really thought she were pregnant, she'd be seeing doctors as if she were, like she did with the four other kids that she had. She would have given birth in a hospital like she did with the other kids, but she didn't. It was all planned ahead. It was, she looked up how to cut a baby out. She looked up how to clamp the umbilical cord. She looked up a birthing center that would be discreet enough where she thought she could get away with lying about it. They just didn't happen to have babies born on that day. That's
right.
It was ruled out. It was, there was no record of anything, but she told her husband there was, and he and their friends believed that.
Mm-hmm.
She strategically let her belly get bigger.
Yep.
And I'm not saying she wasn't ill. Of course she was, but she wasn't delusional about this. People have PTSD and depression. I promise you, you have friends and family that do. And they don't do this. They haven't done this. They will likely never do anything to harm a fly.
Right.
Because those diagnoses don't make that. Like, those things added up don't equal this.
Right.
But desperation can.
Yeah. And I think
lack of respect, if that's the word, for other human life could.
Well, and I think too that, like, it's awful, it's horrible, it's so sad in so many different ways. But I think to Zeb and Becky. I think to Zeb and Becky, and I think, well, now they've got this little girl that's going to remind them every day of the woman they lost.
But thank God.
For this woman to make believe for 24 hours and not deny it and come out of it in like a, yeah, well, we tried.
Well, exactly. But violence is what Lisa knew.
Right.
She was failed as a kid. She grew up and she failed her kids and she failed herself. And I feel so terribly for what she went through. It was vile and evil, and no child should be subject to a fraction of what she experienced. Yeah. And as hard as it is, she needed to deal with that. She may not have had the skills or the knowledge that help was out there, that treatment existed, that resources were there for her. And that's also awful, but she is still responsible for her actions.
Yeah.
This context doesn't excuse or negate what evil she did, but it does offer some of the background where you can imagine how her thought process would be flawed.
Right.
As for Bobby Joe's daughter, that baby who was cut from her body and ripped away from her in the moments just after she died, she was returned to her family, her real family. Good. Her dad named her, I won't say renamed her, named her Victoria Joe, as her mom wanted to do.
Aww.
I've purposefully not looked into her.
Good.
She deserves that. She'd be 20 today.
Atta girl.
She has family and love and support from, I mean, essentially everybody that loved her mom loves her.
Right.
Family has come together to support Zeb when he was raising her. But the family is still, after 20 years, pained by the loss of Bobby Joe and how they lost her so senselessly.
Yeah.
So suddenly. Her mom spoke with her an hour beforehand. So violently. But since Lisa Montgomery was put to death, they were able to gain at least some closure. That wound doesn't need to be reopened every time Lisa and her defense team appeal. Appeal again. Anymore. They know that the person who caused them so much pain and grief can't hurt them or hurt anybody else anymore. Victoria Joe was a very loved girl whose family fought to give her the best, most normal life they could. And if Bobby Joe were around, I'm sure she'd be very proud of that.
Yeah.
She is now nearly the age her mother was.
Wow. Yeah, just a few years away. That is awful.
Thank you.
And horrendous.
But it makes you, the context is so important. It was like Bobby Joe had all of the things Lisa wanted. The happy husband, the hard working, they were a team. They loved each other. They were going places. They were going to do things. And Lisa begrudged her that. Apparently. But also just wanted that impulsive sort of happiness again that she wasn't going to have organically.
Right.
But she could try.
And she tried. I think it's so, so devastating all around.
It is. I have every single person we talked about is a victim in this.
Yeah.
Minus Jack. He can rot in hell.
Yeah.
That stepdad. He.
Ooh.
Pretty bad. But everybody here was a victim in some way. That doesn't mean you can't also be a perpetrator.
No. They're not mutually exclusive. And honestly, a lot of times they overlap because people do what people are taught. People do what people are shown. And
hurt people hurt people.
Yeah. That is one of the most accurate and devastating cliches every time, because there's almost, not no such thing, but there's almost no such thing as a perpetrator who hasn't been a victim in some way.
Pretty much.
And that is why I think it's so important that we talk about accountability. We talk about that rehabilitation and changing your behavior. And I know that at least for the last few generations, there's been a lot of stigma and taboo around therapy and working on your shit. But honestly, I'd way rather have someone go, oh, she's going to a therapist, than go, oh, did you hear about the woman she murdered and the baby she stole?
Yeah, or did you hear
that? Because one of those is actually morally incorrect.
Yeah, did you hear that she lived her life in pain?
Right.
Like, oh, you mean she's trying to do something about it? You mean she's trying to, you know, she's sick and tired of being sick and tired and she wants to do something and feel better?
And be a healthy human being.
Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Who can fault you that?
10 out of 10 times I would prefer to see that than just not. Than that, even if the only alternative is you were just unhappy.
Right. And honestly, like, this is not to say that anybody is the best or that you can, quote unquote, graduate therapy and be a constantly happy, healthy person. That's not realistic.
Or
but
that those who go to therapy, if they didn't, would harm people. That's not the case either.
No, it's just we expect people to do their best. I definitely needed to go to therapy, but I'll tell you what, I was way meaner before I had coffee than I was after I had coffee. So that might have been some self-medication. My good friend Randall and I used to ride the bus together, and he knew, literally, he would not talk to me before my coffee was empty because he was like, you're scary.
Oh, can confirm Randall, still the case.
Yeah. It is only through the grace of God and a lot of SNRIs that I can be a decent person before that. But no, I think this is a really wonderful case to remind you to actually be good to your kids. I know that they're not fully grown humans yet, but that's an extra reason to be nice to them because they don't have all the tools and processing you do. To love your family, make sure they know it, because you never know when your call is going to be the hour before you get worse news. And just go to therapy. It's good. The worst thing that it does is another person telling you that you're pretty and you're doing well. Like, that's the worst therapy you'll have.
Yep.
And even that's great. So thank you for this. This sucked.
You're welcome.
If you guys did want to see pictures, though, of the people that we're talking about, the places that we're going, all of that, you could do that on our Instagram at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period TIME period FOR period TRUE period CRIME period POD, because podcast was too long. But if you, much like our name, wanted to send us your thoughts, your feelings, the information of your therapist if they're accepting clients so we can post it anywhere we want. I'm mostly kidding. You could do that to our email, but Allie, where would they email that?
If you wanted to send us an email, you could do that to about time4tc@gmail.com. So that's aboutime4tc@gmail.com. We love you and love to hear from you. Don't forget to rate, review, subscribe, and do all of the fun things. Mm-hmm. And thank you for bearing with my voice today.
And this awful, heinous story.
Yes.
But now that we're done, I hope you guys get an appetite again sometime soon. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, but if I do look at my clock, that was about time for true crime. Bye. Jeez, dude. Nice.